Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
A lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's all of the above.
That's not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Between Two Ovaries. Today we're talking about ovarian cancer, the facts, myths, and future frontiers.
Yeah, so we thought this episode would be important because I feel like it's one of those conditions that people are really concerned that they've got. So if they have any symptoms in their tummy and they're a woman, they kind of like, have I got ovarian cancer? And there's quite a lot of adverts recently about if you've got bloating and tummy pain, then you should see a doctor and you might have ovarian cancer. And the adverts do actually say you've probably not got ovarian cancer. And I think overwhelmingly that is the answer to this. Yes, some people will have ovarian cancer, but it is very few and far between. But it's good for people to know kind of what are the symptoms, what to look out for, the different types of ovarian cancer, and kind of where we go from there. So that's why we were doing this.
So we thought we'd describe what ovarian cancer is to start with. I think it's probably really important just to say that ovarian cancer is sort of a malignancy. So it's where the cells are growing abnormally and can spread to other parts of your body. You can get cysts on your ovary, which are sort of, you know, described as tumours potentially, but are not malignant. They are benign, so not cancerous, not going to spread. It gets really, really confusing when we think about all the different types of ovarian cancer, and we don't want to confuse you unnecessarily and ourselves.
But let's quickly just say that ovarian cysts are very, very common.
Yes.
Ovarian cancers are rare.
Yes. Ovarian cysts, everyone will have at some point.
Like, happen all the time, and especially when you're younger, because you have these like physiological, normal cysts on a monthly basis, which can get quite big. And then you can have just have like simple cysts quite often. Ovarian cysts we see very, very often. Ovarian cancers we don't see very often.
So when we think about the types of ovarian cancer, there are sort of three broad categories. So you have epithelial ovarian cancers, which are the most common type. So 90% of these cancers, ovarian cancers, are epithelial. So they develop from the cells on the surface of the ovary and from the fallopian tube. You also have germ cell ovarian cancers, which sound funny, but they essentially form from the cells within the ovary that go on to develop eggs. And then you can have sex cord stromal ovarian cancers, which grow from the cells that hold the ovary together.
Yeah.
So there's three broad types, and then epithelial is the most common.
Yeah, epithelial the most common, and these are where you get your high-grade cancers, unfortunately. And a lot of times, although people talk about bloating and tummy pains, a lot of times when people have a high-grade epithelial ovarian cancer, it's quite late on that they'll present. They're quite quick growing, and you can find that some people will present with actually fluid on their tummy, so something called ascites, because the ovarian cancer's already kind of spread and got bigger, which is obviously problematic and makes treatment more difficult. Another type of epithelial ovarian cancer that some people might have heard of is when endometriosis goes into a cancer. Now, a lot of people with endometriosis are really worried about this, and obviously it is a concern, but on the whole it is a low risk from an endometriosis to go to a cancer. So it's still kind of a low proportion that would happen too. But it's something that can happen, and they fit in with that epithelial group of cancers.
So as we mentioned, we're not going to go into all the different types of those three broad categories, but one that is of interest that we thought would be interesting to discuss is within the germ cell type of ovarian cancer, which was the cells that form the eggs, you can get something called a dermoid cyst or a mature teratoma.
Oh, yeah. Are these the very interesting cysts?
Yeah.
Teeth?
So these, just to clarify, are not cancer. Yeah. So as we mentioned at the beginning, you can have cysts on your ovary that are not cancer. And these are a type of non-cancerous growth on your ovary. But yes, they are interesting because you can get, because they develop from the cells that can go on to produce eggs. And if you think about the fact that an egg goes on to produce all the cells in your body, they can produce lots of different types of tissue in the cysts. So you can get teeth, you can get hair.
So they're totipotent cells. So they're stem cells in their basic form. Mm-hmm. So they have to be able to produce everything.
So they can produce everything.
Yeah, so you can see, like, often you'll have a scan, you know, if you think you have a bit of pain or you find a cyst. And on the scan, you can see signs that it looks like a dermoid.
Sometimes
you can see teeth, you can see bone. Sometimes just bits of tooth. Sometimes a full tooth. And when you remove them, so if they don't always need to be removed, but if you did have it surgically removed, you can literally see hair, fat cells, teeth, cartilage, bone.
They're really difficult because when you start getting the hair and the fat cells out, obviously it's everywhere. So you need to just wash and wash and wash and wash to get everything out if you're having a surgery to have that removed.
Yeah.
Obviously the surgeon to do, not anything to do with the patient.
Yeah.
They often get removed because they can tort, so they can twist. And then they could kind of, if it's twisted and the blood supply to the ovary is compromised, then that ovary could die.
Oh, right.
They can get quite big. Which obviously you don't want because you don't want a massive
and
cyst.
If it's causing you pain in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, they're not going to go away. So when we have these physiological, in inverted commas, like normal cysts, sometimes they do go away, but these aren't going to go away on their own. So they're only going to get bigger. So most people would have these removed if they were a sizable and causing pain.
But they're not cancerous.
They're not cancerous. Okay, they're just interesting.
Just checking.
So, I mean, there's lots of different types of ovarian cancers that are very interesting. It's just that we're going to try and keep it a little bit more simple to
general
digestible. People can understand.
Yeah.
And we can understand the different types of ovarian cancer. So we thought we'd move on to sort of how common it is. So it's not very common, which is the overall message. Ovarian cancer is the sixth most common cancer diagnosed in women in the UK.
Okay.
So that's women specifically. So it's not the top cancer. It's, it's lower down. It's sixth. And actually, there's only about 7,500 people in the UK diagnosed each year.
So when we say it's rare, it is rare. It's not something that everyone's going to get. So if you have got pain, if you have got a cyst on a scan, it's still a small chance that it's going to be an ovarian cancer. And mostly these will affect these ovarian cancers that most often affect people that are older. So 65 is the mean age. So you're postmenopausal, and that's potentially when you would get an ovarian cancer if you're going to get one. It's very rare to happen earlier on in life, and I think people need to be aware of that, and that's kind of the learning point that we want to put out there. Yes, get checked out if you're worried about things, but really try and kind of put it into perspective that it is very rare. They can be more common in certain groups of people, and I think it is, obviously we go on to this with risk factors, but I think it's important for people to understand there are certain subsets of people that have more chance of getting an ovarian cancer. So if you have a BRCA mutation, so these are gene mutations, or if you have a Lynch mutation, then you're more chance of getting an ovarian cancer. So BRCA is lists like with breast.
Heard of it in breast cancer.
There's quite a lot of famous people that have talked about that. So it's an inherited gene mutation, so you inherit it from your parents. So what you would notice is if in your family you had lots of breast and ovarian cancer, then
usually younger
you might.
As well.
So early ages.
If people have got ovarian cancer in their family but they're 80, then this isn't kind of a BRCA related issue. This is more of a, by the time we all get
older
to a certain age,
we
will all have a cancer. Whereas if you've got ovarian cancers, if you've got breast cancers and you're 30s, 40s, 20s sometimes, this isn't kind of a, not that it's ever normal, but it's definitely way outside
the realms of normality. Got a gene mutation like BRCA or Lynch.
Would they be sort of, if you had that family history, would you be monitored, sort of maybe screened earlier?
Usually it'd be a case of if there's if someone's had a breast cancer, you can test to see if it's a BRCA positive type of cancer. Mm-hmm. And then you might, then it would be very, you know, you'd need to have a conversation about who in the family would want to be tested, obviously, that kind of thing. But yeah, you can do it that way. And Lynch syndrome is another genetic mutation which is inherited again, and that's associated with breast cancer. But in that family history, you might also see lots of bowel cancer as well.
Endometrial cancer.
Yeah.
With the mutations, if it is that there's a big family history, and if it is that they think that it is running through the family, you would see a genetics doctor. So the genetics doctors counsel, but they also kind of do a whole family tree and kind of work out who had cancer when, what cancer they had. Are these cancers that are in the same kind of family that would be a related cancer? Could there be a gene abnormality? And then they would discuss with you whether you would like to have screening, because this is screening. So you're basically being told that you have a gene mutation that could cause a cancer. Would you like to do something about it? And then it's kind of a case of, would you like to have breast surgery? Would you like to have ovarian surgery? Because this is your risk reducing surgery. And as Alison said previously, that's like Angelina Jolie, I think.
She's one of the most famous. I remember her name in my head.
I was like, who is she?
And also Kylie Minogue.
I don't know.
Is that?
Did she
just have breast cancer, or did she have a BRCA mutation?
Oh, I don't know.
To be confirmed.
Yeah. But no, Angelina Jolie is one of the most sort of, it's probably widely known.
Yeah.
She has a BRCA mutation. She had prophylactic double mastectomy, so both breasts removed. And yeah, so that's something that you can have. You can also have
that as a precaution.
To prevent it. So as Nick said, you know, if you are someone that has this risk, you would have a conversation about if and when you would want risk reducing surgery, whether that is when your family's complete, or, you know, if you don't want children, then at some point earlier if you want to.
It's difficult though, because obviously it's a big trade-off. Having your breast removed is a massive part of you. So that's one thing, but actually having your ovaries removed would mean that you were completely deficient in estrogen, because these people, obviously, with regards to having increased risk of cancer, would be people that you wouldn't routinely put on HRT as well.
Oh, of course.
So you're going to put them in a surgical menopause really very early on.
Yeah.
And it's kind of how they would be with regards to that. And then you've got to think about bone health. You've got to think about hormonal health. So there's a lot of, it's not just as easy as, oh, well, I know, we'll just have your breasts off and your ovaries removed, and then you will definitely reduce your risk of cancer. Yeah. You've got to think about life and living and pros and cons of things. So it's not straightforward, and that's why the genetics doctors are amazing at kind of discussing this through with regards to your risk, how you feel about your risk, and then what would you like to do about it.
Yeah. There are some other kind of risk factors with ovarian cancer. So one, essentially, ovulation. So the more you ovulate, the more chance that the cells on your ovary could mutate and could cause cancer. So anything that means that you haven't had a pause from ovulation in your life means it could increase your risk of ovarian cancer. For example, that means that if you've never had children, if you've never breastfed, if you've never been on the combined pill or anything that suppresses ovulation, over your lifetime, you've had more ovulations, more chance of mutations and damage in the cells, and therefore a little bit of an increased risk of ovarian cancer. On the flip side, that means that it's kind of protective if you have had children, if you have breastfed, or if you've had any hormone treatment that prevents you ovulating for a while, that reduces your risk of ovarian cancer.
So there are a couple of things. The other things are smoking, which kind of
always
increases the risk of lots of different things, and being overweight. So again, we've said kind of being the healthiest version of yourself that you can be will decrease these risks. Having diabetes. So there's quite a few things that increase your risk of ovarian cancer. The ones, obviously, that we've said that really increase your risk of ovarian and breast cancer for BRCA and the others for Lynch are if you have these genetic mutations.
So we touched a bit on how the symptoms are very vague, so I think we should cover what they are.
I think it's difficult, isn't it, with
really
symptoms?
Really tough. So one of the most probably widely recognised symptoms is like bloating. And actually a lot of the symptoms of ovarian cancer, unfortunately, are often symptoms of daily life, and symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome. So things like being bloated, constipated, changing your bowel habit, poor appetite, feeling full quickly, anything like that can be associated with ovarian cancer, but you can also have those symptoms and absolutely not have ovarian cancer, which
I think
is why it's really hard.
As you said, daily life, changing diet, stress, IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Yeah. There's loads of things that they overlap with. So it's difficult to tease out what is and isn't an issue.
Yeah. And is there any sort of screening you can do?
No. So screening for ovarian cancer is terrible. Yeah. And there's been lots and lots of studies that have been doing that showed it's terrible.
Yeah.
So the studies have looked at screening in low-risk populations and in high-risk populations, and basically they don't work in either of them. Mm-hmm. So what happens is they've had a blood test. So that's a blood test that's checking your CA125 level, which is a level that is increased with certain ovarian cancers.
Okay. So it's a simple blood test. A lot of people might have heard of it. CA125 is like a protein in your blood, which if you have ovarian cancer, it's likely to be raised.
Okay.
But if you don't have ovarian cancer, it might be raised.
So it's not really a determinant.
It's not like specific to ovarian cancer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you have endometriosis, you will have a raised CA125, but also other things.
If you've had a chest infection,
lots of things.
It's a bit like an inflammatory...
A little inflammatory protein.
Yeah.
So it's not great.
It's not completely
for screening.
Specific. Yeah, so for screening cancer. Point of view.
So there's not something like, obviously, for cervical cancer, they do screening through smear tests.
Yeah.
There's not something like that for this.
No, not yet. So they were also looking at doing an ultrasound alongside the blood test, and working out kind of what they can see on the ultrasound. And if your ovaries look normal, then we're really quite happy. Mm-hmm. If your ovaries look abnormal, then that becomes an issue, because there are so many normal ovarian cysts that it's difficult to work out whether it's a normal ovarian cyst. Yeah. Or
is the only way to take a biopsy?
A definitive way is to take a biopsy, but we've got scoring systems that are in place that have been kind of well worked out that can give you sensitivity and specificity, so they can tell you the chances of it being a cancer. And they would combine what they see on an ultrasound scan with the blood test as well, and then sometimes further imaging such as an MRI as well. And then there's always kind of a big discussion with the team, so the oncologists, the surgeons, the doctors, the radiologists, and a lot of times the people that would look at the biopsy specimens histologists, people, and they would kind of get together, have a chat, and kind of decide about where the person should be treated. So if they think it's definitely going to be a cancer, it will be in like a centralised unit. And if they think it's low risk for an ovarian cancer, then they would be looked after at potentially kind of a more of a district general hospital.
And just to go back to the screening as well, because I think we've really highlighted why it's so poor in ovarian cancer, because we haven't got one thing that is high in ovarian cancer that's low in every other condition, which is what you need for a screening test to be useful. So only in an early ovarian cancer, only one in two people will actually have a raised CA125. So even when you have it's not always raised, you know. And then on a scan, although you can get a lot more information from an ultrasound or an MRI scan, it can't always say, yes, this is ovarian cancer. So we need a test that is, or something that you can detect that is only raised when you have ovarian cancer and not in anything else. But that's really hard.
The really great thing about cervical screening, going back to what you said, Eleanor, is that you're picking up precancerous lesions. So you're picking up precancerous changes to do something about it before it's a cancer. With an ovarian cancer, you're trying to pick up an ovarian cancer early.
Once it's a cancer,
There isn't like a precancerous lesion that we're picking up and sorting out before it gets to a cancer. So the problem is, it's already a cancer. And if it's already a cancer, if we're telling you the most common is on the surface of the ovary, well, the surface of the ovary is in contact with like all of the things, isn't it? We've said on numerous occasions that the ovary isn't surrounded by anything, and also it's kind of within the, you've got your bowel there, you've got your womb there, you've got the side walls of the pelvis there, you've got lots of things in really close proximity. It's a very busy place.
It's a busy place. It has a very good blood supply.
So which is quite good for
cancer.
So with regards to it like spreading and spreading to the surrounding structures, it's very quick for that to happen. Whereas with an endometrial cancer, so that's the cancer of the lining of the womb, that's in the lining of the womb, and then after the endometrium you've got that myometrial layer, so the muscle layer, then you've got the peritoneal layer, so you've got quite a lot of layers before you get to anything else. So you can see when we're talking about different cancers how they spread very differently and act very differently. Ovarian cancer, unfortunately, is kind of, the ovary is on lots of different things, so it's a lot more difficult to contain.
Yeah, so screening's not great. Diagnosis, we mentioned again, so it will involve what Nick mentioned, so potentially blood tests, different scans, and a discussion with lots of different team members to decide, you know, what would be the best course of action.
Yeah.
And that brings us quite nicely to treatment.
Yeah. So if you did scans and you had seen something and you thought, yeah, we do think that this is ovarian cancer, what would be the first go-to thing to do?
So it depends on you, your kind of age. You know, if you're postmenopausal versus premenopausal, there might be a different consideration in what kind of surgery you would have. And also the type of cancer that we think you have, and also the stage of cancer. So is it just in the ovary, or is it also in other parts of your body? So it's really hard to say, like, oh, this is what the treatment would be. But it can involve surgery, and that surgery might be something a bit more conservative, like just removing the ovary and the tube. Or it could be more extensive, removing the ovaries, both ovaries, the tubes, the uterus, lymph nodes from around the area, biopsies from other parts of your body.
It can be completely different. And as somebody who's 30 and not had children, you're going to do a very different surgery to somebody who's 65, and depending on what you find. So if it's somebody who is young, which are very rare to happen, but a lot of times they're not going to be these where they're everywhere kind of cancers. They're just going to be confined to one ovary, so you'd remove that ovary in the hope that you've got a normal ovary still there. Then you could think about maybe fertility preservation if that's appropriate.
So that would be
collecting eggs and storing them for future use for fertility.
Or if you were a young person, that the best way to treat your ovarian cancer was to remove both ovaries, but you want to have children in the future, that's something that you could
think about,
talk about beforehand.
Obviously, if there's abnormal looking tissue in both ovaries, then fertility preservation is not going to be acceptable, because we don't want to be putting needles into cancerous structures and potentially spreading it everywhere else. When the cancer surgeons do the operations, they are so careful to try and keep any capsules around things and not break them, because you want it to be taken out as a whole and contained.
As soon as you puncture that,
you're upgrading it, upstaging it, because it's going other places. So you need it to be as contained as possible.
But so the surgery varies depending on the type of cancer you have, what stage it is, you. But there's also chemotherapy as well, and there's also radiotherapy. So it'd be, you know, individualised, and I think it's too difficult for us to really say exactly what each type of cancer would be treated by, because it depends so much
sometimes
on the person and the cancer.
Sometimes they won't have surgery first either. Sometimes they'll have chemotherapy to try and shrink things. And then they'll have interval debulking surgery, so they'll have a surgery after they've had chemotherapy to remove as much identifiable cancer tissues as possible. And sometimes with an ovarian cancer, this means that they're stripping under the diaphragm, they're removing your spleen, they're taking part of your bowel, they're taking, you know, these can be massive surgeries,
but not always.
If you can decrease any visualized cancer to nothing, chances of chemotherapy working and chances of prolonging life are better than you leaving cancer there. So they can be quite radical surgeries.
And there's also, so there's a different type of chemotherapy that is available, called, so HIPEC, nickname hot chemotherapy, which I think is much easier, but HIPEC means hypothermic intraperitoneal chemotherapy, which essentially is, if you're having surgery, and I think it tends to be sort of latest, higher stage ovarian cancers.
So it's usually debulking, I think, that they do this at,
And so you would be having surgery for your ovarian cancer. During the surgery, one step would be that hot chemotherapy agents would be put into your tummy. And left in there for approximately 90 minutes to act, and then would be removed, and then the rest of the surgery would continue. So that's something that is being introduced and used in ovarian cancer. It's also used in other cancers as well. It might not be suitable for everyone, but it's another thing that exists that could be part of someone's treatment plan.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's not easy to diagnose. It's not straightforward to treat. There's no good screening issues at the moment. But I think it's that kind of, if you think that you have change in symptoms, if you've got change in bowel habit and you're older, then you definitely need to see a GP. Mm-hmm. If you are worried, then you need to see a GP. But also you need to bear in mind that on the whole, people haven't got an ovarian cancer, and hopefully you can be reassured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That was basically everything we wanted to cover, I think,
with ovarian
cancer.
Mm-hmm. So with regards to any questions?
Yes, we do have some
questions from our followers. So I think we have covered quite a lot of these.
Okay.
We do tend to. We do quite well.
Can lifestyle factors such as diet and exercise reduce the risk of ovarian cancer?
Well, yeah. So definitely things like not smoking, being a normal, healthy weight, eating healthily, exercising can reduce your risk of all cancers, not just ovarian cancer. And then also I think something that we didn't mention that is useful to think about is if you have ovarian cancer and you are potentially someone that's going to be lined up for surgery, one thing you can do to really improve your like outcomes would be to try and amend your lifestyle factors at that point. So if you are someone that has smoked, you've been diagnosed with ovarian cancer, stopping smoking then, if you can, is a really good thing to do to help your recovery from surgery.
Being
and things
in
like
the healthiest space you
can. If you can, you know, if you can reduce your weight, if you need to, stopping smoking, living a bit healthier can be really good for improving the surgery or the treatments that you have afterwards.
We have, as we said, covered a lot of these, but we've been asked, you know, is there a first sign, or what might a first sign be? Is there anything that...
This is why it's so difficult, I think, isn't it? It's as you were saying before, like, by the time you've got symptoms, it's often...
Almost too late.
Not too late, but, you know, it's not an early cancer.
It's not precancerous when you get symptoms. Yeah. Like, there isn't.
And the symptoms are just so vague. Yeah. You know, as we mentioned, a bit of persistent or vague abdominal bloating, changing bowel habits.
So what's different for you, really, then?
Yeah, definitely see somebody, but just remember that it's a 2% background population risk, so it's really very small.
Yeah.
That's a lifetime risk. When we talked about the other genetic conditions, you've got a much higher chance, and I hope that those people would be in kind of, with regards to screening and with regards to, I know we've said there's no good screening tests, but I mean, with having these conversations, open conversations about risk reduction surgeries, like your chances are so much higher with the BRCA 1 and 2 that it's kind of you really need to think about kind of where you want to be going with regards to the risk reduction surgeries.
So it is BRCA 1 that has an increased risk of ovarian cancer, and BRCA 2 does as well, but it's less so.
Yeah.
So BRCA 1 mutation, you're more likely to get ovarian cancer than you are with BRCA 2, but both are at a higher risk than the background population.
Yeah. Okay. 44% lifetime risk BRCA 1, 70% lifetime risk BRCA 2 of ovarian cancer.
17.
But they're
fine.
Massive compared to the background.
That is such a big change. Yeah.
It would really make you think, like, especially if you'd had a family, or like you kind of like, right, well, I want to be around for the family, so I need to really think about what I'm doing.
Any other questions?
I think we've covered everything now.
Have we got any, you know, sometimes we have links to share, have we got any resources?
Yes, definitely. So we've got quite a few resources. So we've got like the Eva Peel and Macmillan, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll put some links on the description for the podcast episode.
That's perfect.
We'll share those with you.
Great, so good.
So quick disclaimer, everything that we've shared are our own opinions, and they shouldn't be affiliated with where we work, and anything that we've said shouldn't be taken as direct medical advice.
Yeah, and please make sure you're following us wherever you listen to your podcasts, and leave a nice review.
And following on all of our socials at Between Two Ovaries.
Thank you.